You are the ghost. That haunts me still. Like a scratch on every windowsill. Railroad tracks and trains take me home again. Yeah, I gotta find a way. Gotta find a way to see you soon. Snowy lots and lanes, frost on a cold window pane, a candle burns in a dark room. Yeah, but all I see is you. You are the ghost that haunts me still. Like a scratch on every windowsill. Your pretty hands and face, all those nights spent lying next to you. Yeah, I need to see you soon. Railroad tracks and trains take me home again.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Wispy Mop Music Acoustic Radio Podcast Series. I'm your host, Todd Middle Initial C. Walker. Yes, that's right, it's me. And we have been listening to a song by the title of Railroad Tracks off the 2018 CD or recording project by the title of Hearts Like a Guitar by a gentleman who goes by one of two names, either Olds Sleeper, O-L-D-S, or what is it, Jelly Spine Jenkins. And his name is Heath Harden. He's out of the York, Pennsylvania area, and he's on the phone with me right now. Hi, Heath.
Hey, good morning.
Now, how did you come up, first of all, with Olds Sleeper or Jelly Spine Jenkins?
Well, the Olds Sleeper, I'll talk about that one quick. That was my dad used to drag race down in Cecil County, Maryland. He had a Chevelle he used to race. And so we used to go down there. And then I found myself watching drag racing videos, you know, like on YouTube. And and an Old Sleeper is a car that doesn't look like it's fast. It looks like a family car, but there's a big engine underneath. You know, it's got like a hidden power to it in a way. So I kind of like that idea of it. That's where it's stuck. Like metaphorically, I thought like these songs coming out of me didn't really, I didn't look the part. I guess I had an idea in my head of what I should be looking like, but you know, I was just a regular guy writing songs. So,
well, and listening to your songs, if for people who are listening to the podcast and want to check out more of your music, because we only have so many we can play during the podcast, right, is it's oldsleeper.bandcamp.com or jellyspinejenkins.bandcamp.com. Is that correct?
Yeah, I didn't realize you found the Jelly Spine site too. That's funny. I'll tell you just a quick story about the Jelly Spine thing. way back in 2012, I started getting some press for my old sleeper songs, you know, and it was under the banner of country. So, and I was like, okay, that's fine. Cause I've definitely come, what I play is definitely comes from a traditional country. I don't really don't like modern country at all, but from a traditional country viewpoint, I love old country, you know? And, so I also had this batch of songs that were very experimental that I was having so much fun recording that I thought if I released them as old sleeper, it would ruin the taste that some had developed for what I, you know what I mean? Like it was too left field.
Well, yes.
So I came up with the name Jelly Spine Jay because it's like it's kind of like a fearful alter ego. Like here's these weird things I'm recording, you know. So typically the albums that I find that when I'm recording, because I love recording all the time. It's just one of my, you know, I get immersed. Time disappears, you know. But I'll come up with some weird things sometimes, but I still like them, and I kind of stick them over in the Jelly Spine way sometimes.
Well, let's play a little. Let's play a little bit of. Let's see. It's gonna be okay. / Let's hide for a while. To give people kind of an idea of what Jelly Spine sounds like. Is that fair?
Okay. Yeah, that's great.
Here we go. It almost has a little bit of that late 1960s, early 1970s psychedelic.
That's funny. That's great. I kind of hear a little bit of The Cure in there.
Uh-huh.
Like that song started as that drum track thing. And I remember doing that. And that one takes, man, that's a long song. It's like a 7-minute song, I think, you know. Or maybe it's not that long. Maybe I'm exaggerating. But it just kind of unwinds until I start even speaking, you know, later on. So you definitely, that's a great choice to illustrate the Jelly Spine thing. Yeah, definitely way different than my railroad track song that you played earlier.
Now, but most of what you write and record is more old sleeper style. Is that correct?
Yes, I've come to accept all of it now, kind of. And like my last album, 23, that I just released last beginning of this year, actually, at 24, it was a collection of things I've recorded over the course of 2023, and it was a really, there were some covers in there. There's a Pogues cover, there's a, which I incidentally played before I didn't know Shame Was Dying at all, you know. There's a Bob Dylan cover, Subterranean Homesick Blues on a fretless banjo, you know, just things I thought I nailed throughout the year, and I put them all together, and there's a lot of originals there too, but they're all over the place. They're like rocky and like rock and roll kind of stuff, and then some of it's very subdued folk, you know.
Well, here's a good example off of 23. And what's interesting is, and I'm assuming that all the instruments we hear on the recordings you are playing, is that correct?
Yes, yeah.
So you play banjo, bass, drums, guitar, both electric and acoustic. What else do you play?
I got some ukuleles on there. And like I said, I just picked up a fretless banjo for my 52nd birthday, and that's a whole new beast. I like finding new instruments that kind of push me to learn them, you know, like old guitars that aren't even in good shape. I love playing a beat up guitar and finding out how to make it sound good.
Well, here, you know? Here off of 23 is, it's called Banjo Waiting. We'll just listen. It's only about 39 seconds long. So we can
yeah,
do it.
It's a short one.
Here it comes. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming that is the fretless banjo.
That's actually an older band. That's a minstrel banjo.
Oh, really?
From this guy, Bell. He used to make them up in Minnesota. He disappeared. Terry Bell. I bought it off of him. And it's a great little band. It's amazing looking. It's based on an 18-something Stichter model. It's got a really beautiful tiger stripe maple neck. That's just one solid piece. You know, it's crazy. It's one solid piece of tiger stripe maple that he milled into it. I'll have to send you a picture of it. It's really, really cool.
Well, now that you're talking about your different instruments, what we should do at some point in the future is I do video podcasting as well.
Oh,
and,
cool.
Maybe I can come up because York is not that long of a drive from Frederick,
yeah,
Maryland.
Yeah, that'd be great. I live on a little third acre of land. We live in a house that's built in 1850, so you can come up. It's cozy.
Yeah, and we can put a number of your instruments around us, and we can videotape it, and you can tell everybody and me about each instrument,
cool.
How you use it, where you got it. That'd be fun.
I did notice you're big into the instrument in your talks. I'm browsing through your other episodes here before I was talking to you. You guys like to talk the tech.
Well, let's put it this
the
way.
The guitar tech stuff. Yeah, you love it. I'm not really one of those guys, but go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, no, I'm interested in what people play.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to get into your background and your history as to how you got into music at some point during the podcast. But I'm not a technical player. I play by ear. I don't read music, although I learned to sight read vocally a little bit in college. I took a music course and it was drudgery for me, and that was very difficult. So I play by ear and I don't know the fretboard. So for me to play, when someone says, well, just play it in E flat, and it's like, what does that mean? Oh yeah, you
that's
tuned
why
to-
I became a solo artist, because I feel like I'm definitely adept at my instrument. Although I don't, like you're saying, I don't really understand it. I can't play scales up high on the neck while you're doing a blues and F or something. I can't do that. So I ended up playing alone a lot and just compensating, trying to make a full sound because it's just me, on guitar. And man, when I got my first Martin, the D28, which has been my workhorse, I got it on eBay for $1,500 back in 1998, I think.
That was a great price even then.
I know. It was such a, this guy, it, there were bids on it and then no one got it. And then I texted them privately afterwards and it was meant to be mine. It's, it's a workhorse and it's had a side crack I had repaired. It's just been through hell. I've taken it camping with me, in my younger years, just being careless. It's a beautiful thing.
Now in one of your, let me back up here on my computer, on one of your City Like a Broken Song,
right?
2023, you're playing what appears to be a D28 with a sound hole pickup.
Yes, that's the, it's a passive pickup that I use. I prefer to mic my instruments live, and so I'm really reluctant to use that because I get an inconsistent soundboard response when I use that pickup, that LR Bags. And so I just recently invested in a Myrtle mic from what's the name of the company? It's a beautiful just standalone mic, and I just record everything. It just picks my voice and my guitars up at the same time.
Now, Myrtle from Ear Trumpet Labs.
Yes, I finally bit the bullet and bought one of those, and it was totally worth it.
Well, I have entertained the thought for, 5 years or so. I used to do a lot of open mics hosting and songwriter showcases and things like that, and I have a collection of about 18 or 20 microphones, because what I learned doing open mics is not everyone's voice sounds good through a Shure SM58 or Beta 58. Some people have more high end, some have, they're kind of what I call mealy mouthed, and they eat the mic, and with an SM58 that doesn't work. So a Beta 58 works a little bit better, and a Sennheiser is even better because you don't have that same low proximity effect. So I've always wanted to get a Myrtle. So I am so happy to hear someone who I now know who uses one and likes it.
Yes. Yes. It was totally, like I said, I wasn't sure. I'd never spent that much on a microphone before. And I know they're, you're seeing them everywhere on these live performances, like with Sierra Farrell and all these other acoustic groups. You can get a whole group around this one mic if you need to. Or you can avoid, my thing was playing live because I switched between lots of instruments. All those chords in front of me, everything's plugged in.
Sure.
Now I don't have to plug in anything. I just do it all acoustic. It's beautiful.
Now, two questions. First would be, when you're playing a gig somewhere, whether it's a coffee house, or I think you mentioned there's one place you're like an artist in residence, you play once a month in York.
Well, Speakeasy, yeah, they've been really generous with me, and it's a beautiful little room. It's the King George Speakeasy. It's in the basement of Two Tony's restaurant, but it's all decked out with Victorian furniture. Seats about 40 to 50 people.
Perfect size.
Perfect little size, little room for what I do. I just turned down another brewery gig, and I'm not like bragging about this, because I drew a line in the sand. That's why I think I reached out to you too originally. My music's not meant for big, loud breweries. You know what I mean? It's just not happening.
Right.
It feels like a side note, which is fine if that's what you go in there to do. But, you know, I tend to write songs I care about. So I don't want to just play them to the wall, you know? I'm making that decision for myself. It's going to mean less gigs, but I'm fine with that, you know? So.
Now, does the Myrtle pick up extraneous noises, like if someone's having a conversation two seats or two tables over while you're performing?
I haven't had that happen yet, luckily.
Oh, good.
And that could be an issue. And you know, that really could be an issue if because it is pretty sensitive. The way I've got it set up, I've kind of dialed it in to the proximity of me sitting about 3 feet away from it, you know, and it's aimed at my chest. So it's picking up my voice on the top and then the instrument below. Because I kind of tilt it down, you know, as I'm using it.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it's playing with the room. If you have a shallow wall behind you, you've got a whole nother beast.
Right.
You know, it's every place is different. I went down. Have you been to the Sunflower Farm in Frederick there?
I have been.
Yeah, I played there last summer and I took it down there and it was a windy day. And I noticed it was picking up a lot of wind.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Which I think was unavoidable.
Yeah, it's and the way those Ear Trumpet Labs mics are designed, other than putting just the circular disc in front of the microphone, which is not really going to help with wind, I don't think they make any kind of a windscreen or anything like that.
It doesn't appear. I didn't see anything for it.
Yeah, because they're an odd shape. And they're made from bicycle
parts.
So
you kind of have to be prepared, maybe not use it. You know, last gig, I took my backup mic just in case. You know, yep. The setup wasn't good. You got to be prepared, you know.
Isn't that Sunflower place cool?
It is. And I loved it so much. And it was really fun. I just got offered to play again this year, but I turned it down just because I'm like, okay, I'm going to keep it local. Because that's kind of an hour and a half drive for me.
It is.
It's a bit of a drive. And again, that's kind of a floating audience where people sitting down have sandwiches. They're listening to you. But then they're moving on. You
right.
know what I mean? And so it's you. Again, I'm turning 53 this year. Not that that's big of a deal, but I'm just trying to be more focused on good, like some of my favorite performances in the last year. I was thinking about this. Where were my favorite places to play? One of them was on my girlfriend's, she owns a gift shop, front step during Halloween, little kids coming by. That was one of the best all year long. I'm serious. It was so fun. And I was in a big gnome outfit playing banjo and guitar. Yeah, it was beautiful. And those are the kind of things I'm seeking now. You know what I mean? Like, it's got to have some kind of real thing going on.
So I'm assuming then that playing music is not your full-time gig.
I'm a teacher.
That's
I'm
right.
A high school I've been a high school teacher for 23 years. I teach English. So
that fits right in with writing songs in a way.
Yes, it does. It's been very helpful.
Now,
kind of a natural outgrowth.
Many of us who write songs were not necessarily always grammatically correct.
Oh, I hate grammar. I'm talking about grammar. It's expression over grammar. Have you ever read Cormac McCarthy?
I don't think so.
Okay. He is a Western writer, but he's famous for these long passages of prose with no punctuation at all.
Ah.
And your brain, but he's such a talented writer that the images, the way he places them together, you don't need the punctuation. And sometimes the lack of punctuation creates new connotations. You know what I mean? So I, as a writer, I hate rules. It's about communication. It's about communication. That first song you played today, that Railroad Tracks, I was just sitting in I had a garage room in the morning. I remember writing that. It was just words associated. If I had been all worried about rules, that song wouldn't have happened. You know what I mean?
Well, you have a sound, especially on the banjo one, the banjo waiting, but also on Railroad Tracks and some of the others. Leon Redbone, who...
Oh, yeah. I like Leon.
I used to catch him once in a while on some music show on TV, and he had that hat, and he always looked like he was trying to hide his face. And he had that kind of... It was that bluesy kind of slow kind of sang down, you know, as if he wasn't articulating. And I thought it was fascinating. And so the first is, especially when I played banjo waiting, I went, oh, Leon Redbone.
That's a cool connection there. Yeah, I love Taj Mahal too. Uh-huh. Like that banjo waiting thing, it's just like no words came. Like I hit record. I was probably sitting around at my kitchen table. I hit record. I got this little MP3 recorder I use occasionally. It's a Zoom. It's like having a cassette player, but it's smaller.
Yeah.
You know, you can just hit record and it's a beautiful sound. That is straight from that with no audio master. It's just straight from that.
Now, which Zoom recorder do you have?
H2.
H2. Okay.
Yeah. And so it's pretty, I've had three of them. I fell in love with them a long time ago and I hate learning new things. So I have bought three H2s and I know there's probably better things out there now, but I'm probably going to be an H2 man, you know, for a while.
Well, if it works for you, though.
I know. That's what I mean. I just want to be able to hit record when I feel the spirit coming through.
But
you know?
But when you record as Jenkins, with that electric stuff, you're not using the H2, are you?
No, I'm using a Tascam. Another creature of habit. It's a Tascam 24-channel mixer, right, you know, desktop. It's not on a computer.
Okay.
I work on computers all day, so I don't want my music to mostly be on a computer. I'm trying to avoid that. It's got to be more tactile, you know? And so it's kind of like an old school, but it's digital, but it has that old school feel with the sliders and everything. And I've had three of those,
well,
you know, over the years, they burn up, you know, whatever, it just happens.
Well, the fact that you can keep finding them to purchase is
They still make them. It's amazing. Yeah, they're still out there. And they're a pretty good price because people are gravitating so much toward the other that you can snatch up one of these, you know, like these old recorders and stuff that I think are fun to use. And again, it's different from sitting at your desk at work on a computer.
Yeah. Well, you know, finding things used when people are moving on and upgrading at a good price is wonderful. And I have been looking for a resale on a Myrtle microphone, but I evidently people like them too much. If they come up, they're basically the same price they paid for them.
Yeah, they pretty much are. And I liked having the companies kind of behind it that I'm the first, you know what I mean?
Yes.
Like if anything were to go wrong with it, I bought it directly from them. And I think that, and I respect them. But the more I read about that company's history, how cool, like four people in a basement, you know, it's amazing.
And aren't they made from originally bicycle parts?
I think that was part of the gig. I don't remember all of it, but their website, it's really neat. Yeah. If you haven't been on there, you'll probably be sold by the time you, if you go to their website, they've got a lot of good information, featured artists using them.
The,
they know how to sell a product too. Yeah.
Milk carton kids use their microphones.
Yes. Yes.
And a lot of the Americana performers do. One, because
and when
they
I play that, live, that's kind of the vibe I'm trying to give off in that Americana, because I can't do the electric stuff live. So,
well, you have a wonderful lo-fi. In fact, you even talk about it on some of the sites, lo-fi recording sound.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is that intentional or that's just?
Yes.
Okay.
It's also an excuse because when I first started, well, I'll tell you what, it ties in. My grandfather was a bluegrass player. He played banjo. I inherited his Gibson Granada, which is another one of my treasured instruments.
Oh, you know, terrific.
I inherited that. And I knew I had to play banjo when I got that. But he used to sit around and record this old bluegrass station on cassette tapes. And I've got piles of them. And they're all staticky. Mm-hmm. And it's old bluegrass. And that's the sound that's so nostalgic. And so when I started recording my own stuff, I would run my microphone through a distortion pedal.
Oh,
and that's to make it sound like it's an old cassette player. Like if you go back to my early stuff, that's right. And plus, I wasn't sure of my voice too. You know, it was just me learning. But I had a limited budget. I have a married man with three kids. I'm not married anymore, but I have three young kids. I had to do it all in the basement by myself. You know, so.
Well, I assumed you had children because you had mentioned. I think it was last weekend we had tentatively set it up, and then you said you were leaving, you know, for a family gathering or something, you're going away. And then today the reason we're doing this, we're taping this on the day before Easter at 10 in the morning, because at 11 or 12, you have another family thing. So that's wonderful.
Yeah, I try to see my kids. They live locally. My oldest son's 22. Like, they're 22, 20, and 17 now. So they're, you know, they have schedules and jobs.
So they so
I got to squeeze my time in when I can.
So they're approaching the time of life where they're starting to realize that dad isn't a jerk. He's actually a cool guy.
He's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think we've always had a good relationship. Yeah. I'm a pretty laid back person when it comes to, you know, I love my kids. I would try to put instruments in their hand. None of them really pursued it as much. My daughter has a ukulele and guitar. I bought my oldest son a tenor sax for graduation.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That could come in handy.
He was playing in marching, but he was playing. I was loving it at home. You know, just that big resonant sound of that thing, man. And then he's kind of put it aside, but it's still there. I bug him about it all the time.
Well, you know, I know so many guitar players who either set their guitar aside, or not necessarily guitar, but instrument, set it aside. When they got into the working place, they got out of college, or even in college, they set it aside because they're too busy doing other things. And then later in life, when the kids start to, you know, fly the coop, all of a sudden they go, well, you know, I used to enjoy playing that thing.
I applaud people that get back into it. It never left me. It's too much part. You know, it's the thing that keeps me sane. I need to fiddle with something, you know. I even had a fiddle for a while. I wasn't very good at that. I sold it. I just gave up.
So
it was just too much. It was hurting my wrist.
Well, you said your granddad was a bluegrass player. So how did you get associated with music? How old were you? How did you
probably get... him and me at 5 years old, him giving my first acoustic guitar, which always was in my room. And I still have, I'm pretty sure it's the one he gave me, but I'm not sure. I found it in my parents' basement. Him and he used to have these parties, bluegrass parties, you know, and he had an in-ground pool. He was a tile man by trade, but he played bluegrass banjo, and he had a ton of friends in it was a Baltimore bluegrass scene, which used to be huge. Just seemed like endless number of players at his house all the time. And we'd be out swimming, and I was just absorbing all that, you know, just being around as being like a natural part of your life. Like, this is what we do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we sit around, we play music, eat crabs, and cook out. know? A beautiful thing. You know, like, you know what I mean? If I could go back to relive a day, probably those days at my grandmother's pool, you know, just so chill.
So what guitar did he give you?
He gave me some little toy. It's like, I call it toy guitar. And I even wrote a song called Toy Love Guitar it's a little no name Japanese guitar, but it's made out of solid wood. It's like one of those 70s things, you know, that was just like freakishly well built, but it's a no name little 3/4 size acoustic. And then when I was in high school, he bought me an Ibanez, cause I was listening to like Jane's Addiction and like Slayer. And all kinds of heavy metal and punk, and he was, even though it wasn't his type of music, he still like supported me and gave me, you know, a new guitar. He was always about that, and I try to do that too as much as possible. I, you know, I believe in that. I've given away an accordion to a girl that was in my class whose parents didn't want her to have one. I gave it to her anyway. She took it to Belgium.
Oh wow.
Yeah. What's wrong with an accordion? Is that the devil's instrument? I don't know. We were really against it. The only rule I said, you can't sell it. You can give it away to somebody like I gave it to you, but you can't sell it.
Yeah.
So, and she's, from what I know, still has it.
Now, you mentioned that first guitar, and you say you used it on one of your projects. Which one? I'm looking at your, you have a lot of projects.
Yeah. If you go back to, I think that song is on June.
Okay.
If you go way back, it's like the second album it's the first album I released.
Well,
I was recording a lot, and suddenly Bandcamp, I'm telling you what, if you've got people listening out there that write their own songs, Bandcamp is so user-friendly, and it's just a way of sharing music with who knows. I've got people from Norway that have ordered my CD. I'm like, how did they find me in Norway?
Mm.
I'm not saying I'm doing huge numbers or anything, but just out of the blue once in a while, they'll be like, you know.
Well, it's
someone drops a 20 in your Bandcamp account or something. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, it's gratifying to know that someone, one, found you, and two,
yeah,
that they were interested and interested enough to reach out in some way, whether it's to purchase the music or whatever. There's two songs on that, June, and it's Put Down Your Bad and What's So Dangerous. Do you remember?
Because everything else is hidden?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, there's like 14 songs in there. Sometimes I went back and hid songs so that it would be incentive for people to actually buy the album, you know, and then be able to hear everything. Yeah. If you listen to Put Down Your Bad, that's recorded on the toy guitar.
Well, let's listen just for about 30, 45 seconds. Here it is.
Sure.
There's that vocal through the distortion pedal.
Yes.
Very cool.
That's a perfect example of what we were talking about, trying to emulate that, the feel of those old cassettes, you know, because I love that too. I don't know. Do you ever get nostalgic about mediums?
Yes. What's interesting talking, because I've done, this is the 101st podcast and that I've done the audio version. And it is amazing to me how many of the guitar players who I've spoken with who still own their first guitar.
Yeah, like I said, I'm pretty sure this is the one because I found it in my parents' basement and I took it and I brought it home. You know what I mean? But I seem to remember something different about it. But that's, you know, it's immaterial at this point. The fact that having someone in your life that is a supportive presence is a gift, you know. A gift.
Well, I am looking, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. You have 7 rows of 4 CDs each or projects plus one. And my math is not the best.
Is that obnoxious? Yeah. Is it obnoxious to release over 20 albums? I don't know. Sometimes I think it is.
Well, but it's like you said, you've got the recorder right there when inspiration hits, or you're just feeling like, well, let's see what this will sound like.
Yeah. And it's very, and you know what? The people who like listening to stuff like that have found me in that way. That's what's kind of cool. It's like, it's never going to be perfect. It's not going to sound great. Sometimes I am proud of the mix I get, you know, sometimes it all comes together, but they're just like me. I love going and listen to other people's weird things. So I kind of belong to, outsider is a term I tend to throw around sometimes, you know, like outsider folk, like it's not pretty, but it's a little edgy.
Well, the homespun sound, lo-fi sound is reminiscent of Alan Lomax's recordings back in the Dust Bowl period and so forth, when he would go out with his little tape recorder.
For sure.
And it, so it's endearing in that, and it sounds almost as if these are recordings from 50 years ago.
That's cool to hear, because that's definitely what I was striving for. And like I said, remember I said it was an excuse? Because when you put lo-fi, people are going to expect, well, I can hear. Because there are people who are super picky about, like, well, you should really have recorded the, you know, drum set this way, or, you know, that drives me nuts. It's low. So if I just say it's lo-fi,
yep,
it is what it is, you know, because it gives you open range to say, you know, whatever you want to do, you can do.
I picked just one of those many projects. It's called Before and After the Here and Now.
Yeah.
I have not listened to any of these. Do you recall, are there any tracks on there showing 6 tracks that you can remember? If you produced this many songs on this many projects, you probably don't remember from one to the other unless...
Time Will Bear Us Out is one on there that I think... Isn't that the name of it?
Yep.
Yeah, that's one I'm kind of lyrically proud of. It came out, I don't know,
2012.
Poetically? Yeah.
Well, let's listen to it. We may not listen to the entire song. It's 3 minutes, 27 seconds.
I think you get the vibe. It just, sometimes you sit down and you feel things and they hit you, and it's just like, I remember writing that very fast.
One of the songs that falls out of the sky and lands in your lap.
Yeah, and that's so beautiful. And then I wander around thinking it's never going to happen again. I get so depressed. And then it happens, and you're like, oh.
Well,
sometimes I really feel like it's never going to happen again.
Well, based on the number of projects you have produced, you don't get writer's block very often.
It can seem that way. And when you look back over a year and you say, oh my goodness, I recorded 60 songs last year.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. You know, it can seem desolate at times. I don't know why.
Well, let's listen to a little bit of it.
Sure. Sure.
I'm not sure if it's not.
Is that playing?
It doesn't seem to be. We're getting. I'm going to play the one just before it called Horses, just to see if maybe there's a.
Oh, yeah. I played that with a friend of mine. Scott Bookman's actually on that.
Okay. Let's listen just in case, because it could be that particular project. Okay. For whatever reason, Bandcamp's having trouble with it.
Right.
Yes, yeah, same thing. So on that particular. You may want to check with them, or it could be one of those, you know, glitch. It's just today's glitch.
Right. I'm clicking on it as we speak just to check it out, because that's never happened. I was just touting how great they are. It's playing for me.
Well, let me try it again.
Yeah. If you just hit the big play, I guess I didn't go down to this particular song you were thinking about, but I would just hit the main play for the,
Oh, I know why. I had dropped my pot on that. Silly me. Hold on.
That's cool.
Here it comes.
Well, sometimes this life feels like it's broken, where I barely recognize myself. When your past feels like fire, you know it's hard to reach out for someone else. But darling, your hands have seen me safely. Yeah, your eyes, they have shattered. Must have picked me up about 1,000 times. I think time is gonna bear us out.
Well, you know, many of your songs have to do with relationships.
Yeah.
And and I have a good friend who is a, he's a writer of novels, and I forgot what he calls them, nonfiction narratives. And I interviewed him. I went to high school with him. I didn't even know he played piano, but he's a blues boogie-woogie piano player, and he's written a book by, well, anyway. And we were chatting about things, and I sent him a couple of my songs that I've been recording for the past year, and I'm not prolific like you are, trust me. And he goes, well, they're all about love. And I thought, they are? Because I don't think of it that way. Do you, when you start to write them, do you think this is about a relationship, or is that's just what comes out?
Well, you know, you're general. Definitely a lot of my songs are about relationships, definitely. But I also wrote, like last year, Salvador Dali painted my picture. and I'll tell you what I do to alleviate that. And definitely they come from personal relationships. And my last relationship was kind of tumultuous. And so that provided a lot of, you know, like I got a lot of songs out of that one. But I'm in a really good place now and a very happy. And so the happy songs started coming, you know, so it definitely, I think your relationships, if you're an artist responding to your environment, and the biggest part of my environment is this relationship I have with, you know, this woman, and we're trying to have a life together, you know, and I think a lot of it comes out of her. But if I could just for a second, have you ever heard of the 52-Week Song Club?
I have.
Okay, good. So we're starting one for Central PA starting Monday.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we're going to, and I would totally, I don't know, I think I might have limited it by calling it the Central PA one, but I wanted to have a group of people could actually get together every 13 weeks or so. That's a quarter of a year, and share one or two of the things they came up with, because we're all going to be supposedly working in the ditches together, one a song a week on the same theme, you know, each of us working.
Well, so. Michael Arthur, who's out of York, PA. I don't know if you're familiar with him at all.
No.
He's one of my favorite songwriters. He's come down to Frederick when we did the Brewer's Alley Monday Night Songwriter Showcase many, many, many times. I booked him at the Frederick Coffee Company many times when we had music there. And I'll try to put the two of you together. He might be
interested. I'm going to write down his name right now.
Yep, Michael Arthur.
I wonder if I saw his Pecha Kucha talk. Did he do one of those?
You know, I don't know if he did or not.
Okay.
I know he's been interviewed on a couple of the radio stations.
Okay.
I have. Yeah. He's on one of my podcasts, actually. I can't remember how many years ago that was. He took care of his dad during COVID, who's since passed away. And his dad lived down the street from he and his wife, and they made the decision, because his dad was so susceptible to any kind of viruses, he moved in with his dad for that 2 to 2.5 year time span, and basically didn't leave the house unless he absolutely had to. But he's a wonderful songwriter, and he might be interested in that. So, but if
that would be cool.
Yep.
And like I was saying, that gets you, we back to the relationship thing. When you get a theme sent to you from outside, you know, it makes you write about something totally out of your, like the one I really love, Barflies and Babies, was a song. And I wrote about these rednecks who are addicted to drugs and everything. And I never would have written that song.
Yeah, it's not in your wheelhouse.
52, but I totally, it was like making up a little TV show in my head. You know, that's what it felt like.
Well, I want to play, because I found Salvador Dali painted by picture. I want to hear just, you know, 30 seconds.
Oh, it's a mess.
That.
But yeah, go ahead.
Well, Salvador Dali painted my picture. Show looks strange. It's hanging in the Metropolitan in a gold foil frame.
Now, who does that remind you of?
I have no idea.
Who played a Fender Stratocaster upside down and backwards and played with his teeth? And he was known.
Oh, Hendrix.
Yep. That has a very much a Hendrix sound to it.
Oh, that's a big. See, I think people who try to emulate Hendrix would be. They're just so. Why? Don't ever. You know what I mean? But if you can get a little vibe from him, you know, he's definitely one of. I had a blues CD. It was Hendrix Blues of him just acoustic guitar. That's a beautiful album.
I did
come across that one.
Yeah, I will have to look for that, because I have never heard anything about it. And that makes sense, because many of us, in fact, most guitar players started on an acoustic guitar, because that's what was available for at Sears or Montgomery Ward or Western Auto, or wherever our parents purchased the things.
Do you own any resonator guitars?
I don't. The
life changer.
You know, I have many friends who have them. Most of them play slide guitar. And I am not a slide player. I tried it one time. I bought a slide and it just...
Did you detune your guitar first?
No.
An open tuning?
No.
Okay, that's what made it tough.
Yeah.
Do an open tuning, it's like butter.
But I do... there was a fellow, and I can't remember his name for the life of me. Gosh. He got out of the business.
Sun House, and I have a 1930 National I bought on eBay, which is probably one of the reasons I got divorced in the morning. I'm joking about that, but she was mad. But I bought this thing on impulse because it was such a beautiful instrument, and I love it. It's a great guitar.
Well,
it's not an original. The next been replaced in the 50s, so that made the price about one third of what you would normally pay for this thing. Like if it was all original, it'd probably be a $5,000 guitar.
But it probably plays better with the.
It sounds so good. He put a big baseball bat neck on it. This luthier, like if you look inside the F hole, he's got his name signed in there. I'd have to look it up again. But he put a big old, and it's a beautiful slotted headstock, you know. I'm a fan of headstocks. I've bought guitars solely for the headstock before.
Well, I get it. The you know, the thing that bugs me about people who, there's so many luthiers out there and guitar companies who mimic a Martin guitar, which makes sense. It's the most popular. Is, you know, if you're going to mimic their guitar shape, come up with your own headstock.
Yeah.
So I really enjoy a headstock that has a different shape, whatever they, however they do it. And that'll attract
me. I bought an old K. I think it was a K with a big old paddle headstock.
Yeah.
K Silvertone. And it was an F hole guitar. And I bought it and it just did not, it had no passion in it. It was a dead guitar. Like, so I ended up selling it again. I have too many things sitting around. I can't just have a guitar I don't use sitting around. They've all got to be useful.
Well, that's a good way to be, because I have too many guitars that do the case collects dust, and I must admit. So I take them out. I feel badly every once in a while. I take them out and play one or two songs and then put them back because I realize I don't like playing it that much. I just never get around to selling them, and I need to do that.
Well, keep me in mind. What do you got? I already have my next guitar picked out. I'm getting a four-string resonator because I really like playing four-string guitar. I don't know if you've ever done that to yourself.
Yeah. Oh,
I
yeah.
have a Strat that I reduced to four strings.
Now, did you get rid of the two low strings, or which
two high end?
Oh, really?
So it's almost like and then I tune it way down to like low C, like it's an open C. It's a crazy sounding thing.
So it has,
but again, just to put myself in a different, you know, you can only play so many G chords before you get bored. But if you pick up this guitar that you've tuned weirdly and you're like, okay, I'm going to sit here until something happens. You know what I mean? Like, I'm going to figure this out. It's like a puzzle. It's fun.
Well, the many performers have come up with an interesting sound or song based on a mistake, or what I would call the guitar was out of tune but close enough to a tuning that when they picked it up and, oh, that chord doesn't work. What is this anyway? And they fiddle around and they come up with this great guitar part.
Yeah.
So the average
Are you familiar with the idea of like beginner's mind?
No.
It's kind of, there's a, like a Zen saying about it too. In the beginner's mind, there are many possibilities. In the expert's mind, there's only one.
Uh-huh.
And so the idea is you're striving to be put, it's like a childlike state. So when you pick up a guitar, you don't know how it's tuned. It's weird. It's frustrating to you, or that's like being a child again, you know, it's like playing. I don't know.
It's why kids are so good at learning how to use a computer or a phone or whatever. They go, I wonder what this button does. Brink. You know, whereas we look at it and go, I better not touch that. It could break.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's a perfect illustration. Yes. A perfect illustration of the point.
So,
and just to be open to that, you know.
So when your granddad gave you that first guitar, how did your musical journey progress? Did it kind of just stop for a while, didn't go anywhere? Or how did you get
it? It wasn't until I was a teen. Like, the guitar was always in my room. I would play it. I'd make up funny songs to make my brother laugh once in a while. I still remember doing that a little bit. But when I was a teenager, he bought me this. It was my 13th birthday. He bought me one of those giant foam padded amps. What were they called? Custom. You ever seen those custom amps with the big foam?
Absolutely.
Yes. It was like 4 foot high. And I got that's my first Ibanez I got from, my parents helped pitch in for all this stuff, but, So that set me on my, like, I had friends in middle school, like, doing bands, you know. Everybody had a band. And they weren't, you know, just getting together with people and doing that. I guess my lack of athleticism, too.
Well, if you didn't.
I wasn't a great jock. I was a good skateboarder, but I was not a great jock. So I filled my time with other things, you know.
Well, I mean, you're talking to an old surfer who skateboarded when we would take a 2x4 and nail.
Awesome.
We'd cut roller skates, the old metal ones that used to strap on. We'd cut them in half and nail them to the 2x4.
And sounds great.
When you'd hit a large grain of sand, you'd end up with a face full of scabs and whatever.
That's what I was going to say. You probably still have some of the scars, I bet.
Yeah. And I still have
You're braver than I was.
I still have some of the skateboards down in the basement.
That's sweet. Were you living in Frederick then?
No. I grew up on Cape Cod, and I owned surf shops before I moved to Frederick. And so I was big into the surfing and the skateboarding.
I'm fascinated by surfing. I watch videos all the time. Just the big wave guys now that are just so crazy off the coast of Spain and everything. They're 100-foot waves.
Yep. Oh, those guys are nuts.
They're just, it's insane. Like, I can't even get my mind around it. I just love watching it once in a while on my lunch break. I'll put on like a surfing video.
Well, and today is the finals day at Bells Beach in Australia, which is outside of Melbourne. For the World Surf League, and I'll be watching that this afternoon because it'll air, since our time difference, it'll start airing like 4 or 5 o'clock our time. So yeah. I'll finish up that. But now, who were some of, besides your granddad, who were some of your musical heroes as you progressed in your journey?
Well, my uncle was actually on MTV at one point in a band called Boot Camp. So he was a player. That was my grandfather's son. Okay.
Wow.
He was in a rock scene. So that was kind of like seeing him do that. He wasn't a super huge influence, but again, just the idea that it's a viable way of living, you know, this is, you know, music's part of your life. Example there. But I was really into like Angus Young, AC/DC, fourth grade. Oh my goodness. And, even some of the hair metal, you know, in the middle school years, I didn't know any better. I was listening to Rat, Motley Crue. But I still love the riffs and Black Sabbath. Oh my goodness, Tony Iommi. Just heavy riffs. You know, you're 13 years old and crank up the storage. That's all I was doing, just making big noises, you know. But it felt powerful. It felt good. But
You do have.
And then I got into punk, straight edge punk, really changed my whole.
I was going to say, because many of your, especially when you get into the Jenkins side of you with the electric stuff like that, you do have a lot of a punk influence in some of those.
For sure. And I love that. It makes me feel like a kid again.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know. I almost would like to get a band together to be able to try to play some of that live, but I just don't know how, you know, again, can't not picture myself doing it.
Well, and the, and the logistics of trying to get more than one person together for rehearsals.
Tell me about it. Yeah, I know. We've been hosting musical parties here, getting people together at my house. And we do 4 bands, 30 minutes each with 30 minutes in between. So you get a 30-minute set and it's just there's no money involved. Not yet. You know, they're house concerts, but they're friends. Like I'm not really in opening in my house to the general public at this point, but it's been really nice. It takes me back to the grandfather's parties. You know, that's the reason I wanted to do it. But it builds such a sense of community. When people get together and they're quiet in a room together and then someone's playing and it's so intimate and it's church, you know, it's a feeling just takes over. It's great.
Well, there's the title of your next project. It's church.
Yeah.
So what,
you know, for me, music definitely is.
So what is on over the next 6 months, 6 to 12 months, what's your goal, if you have one, to do a new project? I know you've got the 52-week song thing right. set up.
Well, I think, again, just finding meaningful gigs where I feel like it's been a shared experience in some way. I'm playing New Cumberland Earth Day Festival, which is something I've never done before. Just going to go do it. But that sounds kind of wholesome, doesn't it?
It does.
So I'm going to go play that. And it's a morning gig. And I'm playing the Marietta Cherry Blossom Festival. It's kind of like on a stage in the middle of the street somewhere. But that, again, just finding things that give me pleasure and not worrying about being seen or selling anything or doesn't matter. It's about having fun.
Now, do you have, when you do perform live, do you dress a certain way or is it whatever you happen to have on that day?
I do try to, you know, especially if I'm playing speakeasy, I try to look respectable.
Mm-hmm. Now, what does that mean?
I wear my grandfather's Stetson. My grandfather, I also inherited a Stetson from him. So that cowboy hat that you see in a lot of those pictures, they appear if you look up. That's my grandfather's hat. It's another way of just me just like trying to be grounded.
Well, my cousin Philip, whereas our grandfathers on my mother's side, on his dad's side, his grandfather Stetson, He even has his wire rim glasses that he has had over the years.
Oh my goodness!
With new, you know, lenses put in.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm amazed by that. And Rick Winden, who's a good friend of mine down here, he performs in a duo called Winden Ricker. He has one of those driving caps, and it's his grandfather's cap. A grandfather's hat. He has a song about it.
I think a connection, you know, just that connection to the past, it tends to put me at ease. Like when I put that, I usually put the hat on the chair and I take my own chair everywhere I play. I got this chair that I used hay bale to wind the seat of it. It's an old thresh chair or whatever, you know, the mesh chair.
Yeah.
It's an old antique chair. I take that. I take my grandfather's hat. And when I step up there and start playing, I put the hat on. Just feels right.
Now, when you play outside and you wear that hat, how do you keep it from blowing off the top of your head?
I got a pretty big head. This thing's stuck on there. I'm serious.
Because every time I've tried to wear a hat outdoors when it's breezy, I'll be in the middle of a song and there goes the hat.
No, this one's snug. This one's snug. And I'm trying to find a hat repair guy because the interior liner needs to be replaced, the band and everything. I even looked up maybe trying to do it myself. It looks way more complicated than I don't want to mess it up. But there's not anybody around. There's no one around that does it.
You know, I wonder if a shoe repair person who works with leather or someone who
would know how,
or a belt maker or something like that.
Right, right. But right now I've got some duct tape up in there. so when I'm it's a hot night, you're sweating, you got duct tape against your skin.
Well, no wonder the hat doesn't blow
off. Funny. Right.
Well, this has been a nice getting to know you, Heath, and I appreciate
you. Talk.
Yeah, and you and I are going to sign off, but I will be playing Nothing Better from the Hearts Like a Guitar from Old Sleeper 2018 as the outgoing song for people to listen to.
Cool.
But again, tell people how they can find you.
Bandcamp's the best way. So www.oldsleeper, all one word, .bandcamp.com. And if they're interested in, I'm under Heath James on Facebook, but if you look up Old Sleeper, I think I come up there. If you go on Facebook and look me up, you should be able to find me and friend me there. Cause that's, you know, I'm especially you down there, you have a lot of musical friends. I'm definitely interested in community. It's cool. I would love the reason I originally reached out to you, you know, looking for, you were on Underground Music Showcase, correct?
Yeah, I wouldn't.
Isn't that how I found you or something?
Yeah, yeah. I wouldn't call it underground. It's just more local, regional based. I used to book the music for the Frederick Coffee Company, and we
I was talking about, the website. It's undiscovered. You're on there listed as a venue.
Ah, how about that?
Yeah, do you know the site I'm talking about?
No.
Okay, it's Undiscovered Music. If you look that up, it's a website for musicians. It's really good because it's all coffee shops and stuff.
Oh, no kidding.
And you can advertise your own shows, which I do, you know, occasionally. I got to get back on that. But you can also discover other venues. And that's why I reached out to you because I'm like, Frederick sounds cool. I'm pretty sure that's where I saw you.
Undiscoveredmusic.net. Yes, that's correct. Did I lose you? I think I did. I don't know why. Let me call him back. And I did find that Undiscovered Music.
Hi, this is Heath. Leave a message. I'll get back to you.
Well, maybe he had an incoming phone call here. Let's give it time, and we will. And while we're doing that, I'm going to play a little bit of a song called Two Lives. I got this one tonight.
Hi, this is Heath. Leave a message. I'll get back to you.
Well, it's all right. Yeah, I got this one tonight. Lord knows I owe you a few.
There you are.
You know,
hey.
I'm not sure what happened there, but it just dropped.
I think I was walking around and my face touched, somehow turned my phone on the airplane mode. I have no idea how it happened. Sorry about that.
No, that's quite all right. I had just started to play Two Lives. I got this one tonight just for the fun of it.
Okay. Yeah.
And this is what people were hearing.
Still getting you.
Yeah.
I mean, we were about done with the conversation anyway.
It
was kind of funny
I
how
agree.
It just dropped. But again, thank you so much for doing this. And I Definitely. We will get together at some point. I'll bring the cameras up and the lights and we'll sit around so people can actually see.
If you ever want to just play, I have weekends and stuff. I could come down to Frederick and, you know, we can meet up just to hang out. Doesn't matter. It was good talking to you.
Well, you the same. And I hope you have a good Easter weekend. I guess you're seeing the kids, right?
Actually, my kids are going to the other side of their family. I'm going to go spend it with my parents happily and just sit on the couch. It sounds wonderful.
Oh, yeah.
I'm ready for it.
Now, where do your parents live? Do they live locally?
They live over in Lancaster County. Okay. I'm in New York. So they're not far.
Oh, well, you have a wonderful time. And again, thank you so much for chatting with me. And we'll touch up again soon.
You bet. I really respect what you're doing. I'm going down through the list of the people you're keeping a sense of community and spirit alive. That's awesome. Keep doing that. Okay. Oh,
I sure will. And again, have a great rest of the day.
You too. Take care.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Bye. Well, that was Heath Hardin and Old Sleeper. And what a fun conversation that was. And we're going to end the show with his song off of his CD project titled 23, because he recorded it in 2023. And this song is called Nothing. Well, I'm sorry. This is off Hearts Like a Guitar from 2018. It's called Nothing Better.
Of the birds and the buzz of the bees, blueberry wine, life was so sweet. They had nothing better, nothing better, nothing else to do. Alabaster stone. We're gonna fall in love, make us a home. We're gonna whisper sweet things in the autumn breeze, make sweet love neath an old pine tree. We don't need nothing, my love for me. We got nothing better, nothing better, nothing else to do. We got nothing better, nothing better, nothing else to do. Thank you.
Boy and girl went falling down the lane. Fell into a lake of sweet champagne. Near the waters full of love. Skies full of rain. Yeah, the waters full of love. Skies full of rain.
The Whispy Mop Music Acoustic Radio Podcast Series is produced by Todd, middle initial C. Walker. Yes, that's right, it's me, at the Whispy Mop Music Studio in Frederick, Maryland. All music on the podcast is played by permission from the artist. If you're enjoying the series, please feel free to share the link, wispymopmusic.podbean.com, or you can find the show on either iTunes or Apple Podcasts, and I'm sure it shows up in other websites. I found it on a couple other things, but thanks again for listening, and stay tuned for the next show. Have a great day.